Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh.
Inside MLB fans, my name is Benson Spector, and I will be your host today. It is Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016, and we have a very exciting show coming up for you. But before we get into that, I want to give you sort of a scheduling update. Monday, it's probably going to be our best show we've had yet, and hopefully many more to come. It is our annual Stand Up to Cancer show, and I do that every year, and this year, we actually have the privilege of having John Lester share his story on our show Monday, August 8th, and I believe the show time will be set for noon. So please make sure to tune into that. Spread the word around because it will be definitely an exciting show, and I'll be excited to talk to John Lester and him to share his story with you. And that's just a bit of a scheduling update. Monday won't really be a baseball show, but it will be our annual Stand Up to Cancer show. So make sure you put that on your calendar Monday, August 8th, from noon to 1. So scheduling update. And to all the new baseball fans out there, I thank you for tuning in. I know there are a couple. And for all the return listeners, thank you for tuning in as well. So let's get into the baseball now and talk a little bit about last night's Pirates game against the Braves. And they sort of got out of a skid, right? They got terribly disappointing sweep over the weekend to the Brewers. And they came back last night, and they pretty much, I would say, stole a game from the Braves. They had 5 hits, 5 runs, and the Braves had 3 hits, 10 runs. But the Pirates did do enough to pull off. The Braves, I would say, they lost that game themselves too. And one of the people that sort of helped in the winning effort and in the losing effort for the Braves was speedy utility man bench player Adam Frazier, and he was absolutely great. Let's start in the 5th inning on his extraordinaire. Okay, so Francisco Cervelli, very scary moment. On an 0-1 count, 89-mile-per-hour slider from Mike Foltynewicz hits him in the head. His helmet flies off, and he goes to the ground. And at that point, I thought that Eric Frey would probably be the catcher for a little bit of a long-term situation. But I was happy Cervelli got up. He walked down to first, and I thought he was going to stay in the game. But after he went down to first, it was weird because the trainers had already cleared him, asked him all the questions, and he cleared the concussion protocol. He went down to first base. Freddie Freeman started asking him questions, and I do not know the specific questions, but you could obviously see there was a conversation going on. And then Nick Leyva stepped in, the Pirates' first base coach, and Nick Leyva ended up calling back Clint Hurdle, and he called back the trainers, and Francisco Cervelli was taken out of the game. Now, this was obviously a very scary moment, but there was some good news to come out of it. One, Cervelli was feeling good enough to at least go down to first base. And number two, there was a man on first base because Mike Foltynewicz was dealing up until that point of the game. Then Adam Frazier comes up, who didn't really have a very productive at-bat in the second inning. On a 2-0 count, he bounces out to Freddie Freeman. And in the 5th, he had what I would call a marathon at-bat. He was down 0-2 after the first 2 pitches, and, well, 13 pitches into the at-bat, he doubled. And that allowed there to be runners at 2nd and 3rd. So Adam Frazier and Cervelli took it for the team, and then Adam Frazier came through. But then Jordy Mercer, I was actually pretty impressed with this at-bat. I didn't like the start because runners on 2nd and 3rd went out, and he was down 0-2 to a pitcher that had good stuff. But he did get a ball in play. He hit it to Adonis Garcia, and Eric Fryer ended up scoring. And also on the play, Adam Frazier moves up to 3rd, which you don't often see in baseball today. But Adam Frazier, he definitely got that rally going, and it was 1-0 Braves at that point, and he was the one that tied it up. And then the next inning for the Braves, they took the lead again, making it a 2-1 ball game. And in the 6th is where everything sort of fell apart for the Braves. And I think interim manager Snicker was a little bit of showing how he is a rookie manager. And it all started off with John Jaso walking on 5 pitches. And the next play, it looked like the walk wasn't going to matter because there was a routine bouncer at a second baseman, Jace Peterson. And if Jace Peterson would have came up with this cleanly, we did not, I mean, it's anybody's guess who would have won this Pirates-Braves game last night. But he did not come up with it cleanly. And actually, it was close enough for first base that Gregory Polanco was on the safe. He looked safe in real time, but first base umpire Will Little called him out, and Clint Hurdle came out to challenge the play, but the call stands. So at that point, there was runners on. John Jason was on second with nobody out. Then pinch hit utility man bench extraordinaire. Matt Joyce came up, and I was watching the broadcast last night, and an interesting fact: Matt Joyce has an RBI for every 4.4 at bats. He has an RBI. And, of course, Matt Joyce came in through the clutch and granted a C&I single past the outreach glove of Jace Peterson, who had just made the miscue at second base. So that tied the game at 2-2, and the Pirates were not done. Starling Marte, I actually thought after that that Snicker should have taken out Fulton Evich because he still is young and is confident, and he was tiring around 90 pitches at that point. Starling Marte on an 0-1 count shoots a line drive to right field. Runners on first and second. And at that point, I was like, Snicker, you better take Fulton Evich out or else this game might get ugly. Lo and behold, Jung Ho gone. 0-1 count doubles to the left field wall, making it a 4-2 ball game. No, my bad. 3-2 ball game. Starling Marte held up at third. Jung Ho gone cruising to second base. And Adam Frazier, after Eric Fryer struck out, comes up to the plate. And he hits a single, making this a 5-2 ball game, coming up clutch once more. And he was responsible, in my mind, for at least three of these Pirates runs. And he wasn't done after that. He actually stole base, trying to give Jordy Mercer an opportunity to drive him in, which he didn't cash in on. But Adam Frazier, definitely a huge spark plug in the win last night. And if I was to compare Adam Frazier to a pass player, a player with more of a track record, I'd originally start off with Brock Holt. And Brock Holt, he is a Red Sox right now. And he is a great Red Sox, one of the better utility players in all of baseball. And at one point, he was actually on the Pirates. He came up with the Pirates. And he was traded to the Red Sox with Joel Hanrahan in return for Mark Melanson, who was just dealt to the Nationals for Felipe Rivera and Taylor Hearn. But anyway, Adam Frazier reminds me exactly of Brock Holt. And another player that he reminds me of is Josh Harrison. And the reason being is, because Josh Harrison, when he came up with the Pirates, traded over from the Cubs, he played so well that Clint Hurdle had no choice but to put him in the lineup. And I forget what injuries happened. I bet there was something. But he had to start. And he proved himself there, and he just didn't relinquish his starting position. I think that it might be a possibility for Adam Frazier, but the team is a little bit full right now. We'll start off at first base talking about that. John Jaso, I think he is expendable, but I do not know if Adam Frazier can play first base. I know he plays the infield and he plays the outfield, but first base is a whole different story. And he is a pretty small, scrappy player, so I wouldn't be pegging him at first base anytime soon. Let's move to second base and Josh Harrison. And Josh Harrison, they just signed him to a contract. He did get banged up a little bit on Sunday. He had a collision with Keon Broxton at first base, but he'll be fine. Shortstop, Jordy Mercer, he is one of the best gloves in baseball. I love his arm. He can hit the ball. He can bat 1-8, and it's just an absolute great ball player. He's not going anywhere. And then the only place I could see him actually fitting in is at third base. Because Jung Ho gone, he has been struggling this year ever since he has come back. If Adam Frazier is going to sneak his way into somewhere, I would bet on it being third base because Jung Ho gone is probably the most expendable piece out of those, and he can play third base as well. And the outfield, it is full, right? Marte, McCutchen, Polanco, nobody's moving. People are saying McCutchen might be leaving in 2018, give room for Austin Meadows, but we don't know how Austin Meadows is going to do yet. So at this point, I would think the Pirates are going to try to pony up on clutch, and they're going to try to sign him long term. When I was thinking a little bit about the Francisco Liriano trade, what I was thinking is that he had a really lucrative deal. And the Pirates traded that lucrative deal away because, well, he was dead weight. And that dead weight just gave the Pirates some cash to spend in the offseason. And it also gave them the option to try to extend Andrew McCutchen. Because he has said he wants to be a Pirate for the rest of his life. and his contract is up after the 2018 season. So, in the meantime, they're probably going to try to work something out, but I do not think he will sign the contract that he just signed because he is worth much more than that. And he is struggling right now, but I do not think his struggles will continue, and I fully expect Kutch, in my mind, I think he's a Pirate for life. I cannot imagine him in any other jersey, and this Lariana trade is definitely helping the Pirates out in possibly finding the money to pony up to Andrew McCutchen. So Adam Frazier, again, I think he might be able to fit at third base one day. I also think that he would be a good trade candidate one day, right? Austin Meadows and Adam Frazier in a deal, send them off somewhere, get some nice possibly pitching in return. It might be a good off-season deal. I don't know. Just coming off this off the top of my head, you could have Adam Frazier, Austin Meadows in a deal, and you could ship them off somewhere else for quality starting pitching in return. And I think that would be the best bet for Neil Huntington, unless Adam Frazier is just so good that he has to take over at third for Jung Ho Kang. Because even though he did have that big double last night, Gong Beam, Frazier might have to play himself into the lineup. Talk a little about Gerrit Cole and how he fared last night. He went 5 innings, 7 hits, 2 runs, only 1 earned, walked 2, and struck out 4. To be honest with you, I was expecting it much better out of this because he had his first complete game in his last start and pitched all 9 innings, right? And he only pitched 5 in this game against anemic, you could say, Braves offense. And it was a bit surprising to me that he only went 5 innings and he did allow 7 hits. The reason why it was only 1 earned run is because Francisco Cervelli actually had a passed ball in the 4th inning when Ender Inciarte came up. He blooped a single with 2 outs over Jordy Mercer's head. Passed ball. A.J. Pierczynski hits a double, they called it. But Adam Frazier was playing 2nd base. It was a high chopper. It was going to be a tough play to get him out anyway. But A.J. Pierczynski is not the most fleet of foot at 40 years of age. And Adam Frazier ended up booting it, and it went in the left field, and Ender Inciarte scored, so not Gerrit Cole's fault there. That's why only one of those runs is earned. But, I mean, if you look at it at the earned run standpoint, it was good. Walks to strikeout ratio, 2-1, that was pretty good, right? But it wasn't his best stuff. It allowed him to get the W, and the offense helped out with the W, and Jace Peterson, those miscues helped out with the W, and a lot of things helped out with this because it was not a pretty win for the Pirates. If you were going to pick a way to win a ball game, you would not pick the way they beat the Braves last night. You would not score 5 runs on 5 hits. You'd rather have 10 hits like the Braves and score 5 runs. That would be more ideal. But the pitching, Gerrit Cole bared down when he had to. He got the outs when he had to get them, and that's the measure of an ace. Aces aren't going to always have their best up. They're not always going to be blowing people away and getting every single out. But Gerrit Cole, when there were runners in scoring position, when there were runners on base, he got the strikeouts. He got the outs, and he got through it and gave the Pirates a win. And last night, Antonio Bastardo made his, I guess, Pirates 2016 debut. And he did fare pretty well. He went 1 inning, nothing really particular, walk, strikeouts, any of that. And it was solid. And in his 1 inning of work, he had Adonis Garcia fly out to left. He had Ender Inciarte fly out to left, and he had A.J. Pierczynski bounce out to second. So pretty good aim. I would rather see that fly ball to ground ball ratio a little bit down. I'd rather see 2 ground outs to second and 1 fly out to left, but I'm happy with it nonetheless because the Pirates came up with the W, and that's what matters in the end. Felipe Rivero, he made his 2nd Pirates, I guess, debut, you could say. And he went 2/3 of an innings, allowed 1 hit, and walked 1 and struck out 2. So Felipe Rivero, he has gotten a little bit of trouble every time he's come out. But let's talk about what he did. He faced how many batters? 4. So let's revisit that 7th inning. And it started off pretty good. Chase Darnot came up to bat, and he struck him out. Chase Darnot, by the way, is a former Pirates farmhand, so pretty cool that Felipe Rivero could strike him out. Then he ended up walking, I believe it was Gordon Beckham at that point. I think he came in to pinch hit. And then Eric Ibar came up and he hit a single. And then he struck out Freddie Freeman. And after that, because Freddie Freeman is a lefty, Clint Hurdle wanted to bring on the righty, and that's Tully Feliz. And he got out of the inning with runners on 2nd, 3rd after a wild pitch. And he ended up striking Matt Kemp, who was downright awful in his Braves debut. He had a base running blunder, struck out twice, was 0 for 4, and just was not pretty. And he might have said he wanted to be a Brave, but I don't think Braves fans like what they saw last night from Matt Kemp. We have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. But when we come back, we are going to move on to talking. Our next talking point, I should say, is about the deadline. And we're going to be grading some GMs at the deadline and who stacks up where. That's next.
This podcast is proud to be part of the Blueberry Network. That's blueberrywithnoes.com.
We are back in Inside MLB, just previously talking about the Pirates and how they came up with a 5-3 W over the Braves last night. If you want to get a recap of that, head over to the website, MLBinside.com, go to the news tab, and it is right there for your viewing pleasures. We also post daily news article, so you can go check that out there, MLBinside.com. It would be greatly appreciated. And if you have any suggestions, feedback, any of that, just shoot me an email on there. I believe there is a contact us tab. I think it's the third one, actually. Or the phone number is there. It's 877-467-6520. Any suggestions, I will gladly take them. So let's, great. Let's be teachers here. School's about to start up, and I figured the trade deadline just ended, and the trade deadline to me is a test for GMs. And let's be the teachers here, and let's grade our students, the GMs. And we're going to be trying to grade all of them. It's not going to all happen on this show, but I promise you we will finish them Friday. And if we don't finish them Friday, we'll finish them Wednesday, a week from today. All right, so let's talk about the trade deadline. And this year's deadline, it was really another exciting period of wheeling and dealing. It was highlighted by the movement of two impact closers in the New York Yankees, selling off veterans for a massive haul of prospects. Listen to this. On Monday alone, there were 18 players changing teams. And really, this year's deadline, I mean, so much wheeling, so much dealing. The two impact closers that moved, Chapman from the Yankees to the Cubs, and the Yankees are selling. But the Pirates, they traded Mark Melanson to the Nationals because they knew they couldn't re-sign Mark Melanson. So impact closers moving to new teams, and the veterans, they were sold off by the Yankees. Beltran's gone. Andrew Miller, he's gone. So definitely a lot of trades by the Yankees. And it's going to be sort of strange seeing the under 20,000 people at Yankee Stadium over the next few months because, well, the New York media isn't very kind to their bad performing teams. I don't think they'll be kind to the Yankees at all. You might see some boo birds come out as well. And it was really Monday alone, there were 18 trades with 50 players changing teams. And MLB.TV, which I have, is putting a little bit of a special to this. $17.99 is now the cost for MLB.TV for today only. So I would definitely jump up on that $18 for MLB.TV premium because of the 18 trades that went on. So now it's time to ask ourselves, how did all 30 front offices do at this year's deadline period? And these are going to be my annual grades and my annual rankings. And for fun, I like to give teams A pluses. I don't like giving out the Fs and the Ds. I like passing my students. And the first and the best student, this is the star pupil, Chicago Cubs and Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer. And I'm giving Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer a big A plus. And the Cubs, really, they won the trade deadline when they rebuilt their bullpen, in my mind. They acquired Aroldis Chapman, Joe Smith, and Mike Montgomery. Chapman has the potential to be a difference maker in the postseason with possible matchups against Bryce Harper and Daniel Murphy of the Nationals and or the hefty left-handed lineup of the Giants. The move allows Hector Rondon to move back to the eighth inning, which shortens the game for their starters. Smith gives him a different look with a lower arm angle from the right side, and Montgomery just gives him versatility. I mean, the Cubs on paper right now, they were the best team in baseball before the trades, but they improved their chances of winning the World Series with these moves. And honestly, the Cubs, they needed to revamp their bullpen. Their bullpen was their only weakness. If you were going to say, this is why the Cubs will not win the World Series, it was because of the bullpen. And the Stars are not going to all go 9, and they're not going to all go 8 and just give the ball to Rondon. But after they rebuilt the bullpen, mainly with Aroldis Chapman, he is going to be a difference maker. They did give up a big haul, send it back to New York. And Chapman, if the Cubs do go on to win the World Series, and Chapman is standing on the mound making that last out with all Chicago 108 years in waiting, and then Chapman makes sense. But if that does not happen, if they do not win the World Series, if Chapman is not on the mound, then it does not make sense to me, because you're just getting a rental player for a lot of prospects. There. Joe Smith, he is a pretty good pitcher. I like the lower arm angle from the right side. I mean, it's tough against righties because of that lower arm angle. It's tough to pick that up. It's a slider, fastball, whatever, but that will be tough to pick up. I like Joe Smith more than the Chapman acquisition. And then Mike Montgomery, simple, versatility. And that's what managers like Joe Maddon like the most. And I think it'll definitely be interesting to see down the stretch. But no, I do not think the Cubs will be winning the World Series this year. Again, I think the Giants and I think the Nationals are much better, not much better, but I think they're better suited for a playoff run. Let's start with the Nationals. Dusty Baker, I love him as a manager. I think they could go somewhere if Bryce Harper can pick up the slack. The Giants, left-handed lineup, and that will obviously help with Adolis Chapman if he's coming in to pitch in ninth. But they know how to make playoff runs, and it's a even year, right? So I think the Giants might end up in the World Series. But I do think the Cubs do have a chance. I like the Cubs and the Giants most in the National League. The Cubs and the Giants most in the National League. I don't like the Nationals that much, but they are still on that board, and I think it's going to be an exciting playoffs because you have good teams like the Nationals, the Cubs, and the Giants that will be going all out to see who will make the World Series out of the National League. All right, time to grade our next star pupil of the Texas Rangers. Congratulations, John Daniels, on earning an A+. Let's analyze it for a minute. So the Rangers, they were targeting starting pitching at the deadline, but when the potential cost and prospects became, you know, prohibitive, they changed their plan on the fly and focused on offense and bullpen help. They benefited from Jonathan Lucroy exercising his no-trade clause to prevent a trade with the Indians, jumping in and trading two top prospects to the Brewers for him in the final outs. Lucroy's special game calling and above-average framing should really help the entire staff beyond his all-star offensive contributions. The Rangers did well and gained Jeremy Jeffries in the same transaction, as he'll give them another option at closer. Acquiring Carlos Beltran was important because not only does he replace the injured Prince Fielder at DH, but his track record of postseason success with both Houston and St. Louis could be a factor come playoff time. The best part of the Rangers' trades, they didn't give up any of their top young players like Nomar Mazara, Jerickson Profar, and Joey Gallo to get it done. And that's what impressed me the most. And really, they were trying to get starting pitching. That's what they needed. They still do have Cole Hamels. They still do have Yu Darvish. But after that, it's like these guys are all the way up on top of this cliff, and then you just go all the way down. And that's why they wanted to get starting pitching. And they ended up not getting starting pitching, but they ended up, I think, doing well, and that's why I'm giving them an A+, right? And I really don't think they wanted to give up Nomar Mazara, Jerickson Profar, Joey Gallo for the starters that were available on the market. And I mean, there were really no great starting pitching on the market. I mean, I think Rich Hill, he was a starting pitcher that was dealt. Matt Moore dealt to the Giants. But really, there was no big trade pitcher worthy of Mazara, Profar, Gallo. And I love Lucroy. And it's kind of funny because Cole Hamels last year could have been on the Astros. He exercised his no-trade clause, and now he's on the Rangers. Jonathan Lucroy could be on the Indians right now. He exercises his no-trade clause, and now he's on the Rangers. And the Rangers are just benefiting from all these people saying, no, I don't want to go to Houston. No, I don't want to go to Cleveland. I want to come to Arlington, Texas, and win with you. I think John Daniels is proud of that, too. And this Jonathan Lucroy trade, it came in the final hours. I was a little bit surprised because I thought after, you know, the standing ovation in Milwaukee, everybody was up and cheering, yay, Lucroy, thank you for staying. Now they're like, no, Lucroy, you're gone, right? But, yeah, so Lucroy, the deal surprised me because I thought after he vetoed the trade, he would have vetoed any other trade because I thought he wanted to stay in Milwaukee. But now I think that he just wants to stay in Texas for the rest of his career. I think he vetoed Cleveland because Cleveland really didn't have the financial stability to sign him long-term. And Texas does. And I think he just wants to stay in one place for the rest of his career. Of course, unless the Rangers go full rebuild. But I don't see that happening. And I think it was a good move on Luke Roy to allow the trade to come to Texas. And Jeremy Jeffries, I saw him firsthand over the weekend. And he is electric in that crucial spot. And it gives the Rangers just another option in their great bullpen that they have going for themselves right now. Carlos Beltran, another great acquisition. Prince Fielder is hurt right now, and Carlos Beltran, he can play that DH spot. And if you remember, Houston, St. Louis, was he not great for you in the playoffs? Of course he was. And the Rangers are no doubt going to make the playoffs. Carlos Beltran could be a big help in that. And you know what? The star pupils, the who are buying, John Daniels and Hoyer, Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein, maybe they could be meeting up in the World Series. We'll see who wins that matchup. Now let's talk about our next star pupil, and this guy he sold his team. And Brian Cashman, I'm going to give you an A+. And I think, personally, the Yankees, they did one of the best jobs of quote-unquote selling at the trade deadline in baseball history, period. Granted, they have the market's most sought-after assets in Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller, in addition to the best bat move in Carlos Beltran, but the job GM Brian Cashman did wasn't just about what he traded. Not only did he get quantity 10 players, but he also added 4 elite prospects and Gleyber Torres, Clint Frazier, Justin Frazier, and Dylan Tate. As a result, the Yankees' farm system could be ranked first in baseball for the first time since Cashman was named GM. He now has the trade pieces to rebuild in the offseason, the checkbook to play in free agency, and a development department that will have players ready to promote. Perfect job, Brian Cashman. Absolutely perfect. In recent memory, this is, I think, the best-selling job any GM has ever done. I think because the Cubs were desperate for a bullpen help, so they got Aroldis Chapman. The Indians were desperate because Jonathan Lucroy vetoed their trade, so they went out and they improved their bullpen with Andrew Miller, so they gave up Clint Frazier. And the Rangers, they were desperate because they couldn't get starting pitching. They knew Prince Fielder was hurt, so they gave up guys for Carlos Beltran. 10 players for 3 in return. 10 impact players for 3 players that aren't going to help out because they're not going to be any playoff run anytime soon. And Brian Cashman knows this, and he knows that he has money. And the trade pieces now that he has, if he wants to deal these prospects in the offseason for good trade pieces, he can do that now. He has the checkbook to say, hey, free agent, come here. Come to New York. We'll pay you money. And now he could either choose to keep these players in the system, and the development department can develop them and allow them to be promoted and be stars one day, or he could trade them for young, proven players. And Brian Cashman could be setting himself up for a playoff run next year because of what he's done at the trade deadline. And it was perfect. I loved it. And Brian Cashman, I am proud of you. All right, let's move. And you know what? I can't give out any more A+s. I can only give out 3. I mean, I love giving out A+s, but that's just such a high level. It's such a high level to achieve, you know? And the next guy on our grading scale, the 4th best GM, I think, well, people that helped out, goes to the Cleveland Indians. And I think they deserve an A. The A goes to Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff. And I think if the starting rotation can stay healthy, the Indians will have the AL's best group of starters entering the postseason. But really, they desperately needed a closer to lock the game down. And they got their job done at the deadline when they landed Miller from the Yankees. It was a high price to pay with 2 of their top prospects sacrificed in the deal. But the fact that they controlled Miller for 2 more years made it, reasonable. The Indians, they positioned themselves to make a 2-year run at a World Series. They also picked up outfielder Brandon Guyer from the Rays, who will help them against left-handed pitching. And this starting rotation, it is hands down, they're healthy. It's the best starting rotation in baseball, and I'm excited to see it in the postseason because we're going to see some great pitching matchups with their starters. And pretty much starting pitchers, they're not going to go 9 innings every game, and they needed somebody at the back end of the bullpen to pretty much hand in the ball and game over. Andrew Miller's that guy. They got that guy. They did have to sacrifice top prospect Clint Frazier, but they did get Andrew Miller, and they have him for 2 years. And now this is going to help them not only try to win a World Series this year, but attempt to win a World Series next year. And I'm excited to see how Andrew Miller factors into that, too. I think Antonetti and Chernoff did a great job of getting Brandon Guyer, too, because they struggle against left-handed pitching. Guyer can come in, and he can help out against left-handed pitching. And I'm excited to see the Indians make a playoff run because they have the rotation. They have the closer now. And now with Guyer, they have the versatility to mix and match. So I'm excited to see what the Indians will do in the playoffs. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. When we come back, we're going to continue our grading fun. And our next team comes from the West Coast. And we will get to that in a moment. Stay tuned.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. You can find out more at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
We are back in Inside MLB grading some general managers on their performance at the trade deadline. And I would really like to do this because school's about to start, right, in about a month or so. And, I think the trade deadline is the GM's tests. And they are the students, and I get to be the teacher, and I get to hand out grades. And I like to give the best grades first. So let's give out our first A-minus of the day to Andrew Friedman and Farhan Zaidi of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the Dodgers, I think, they made the most underrated trade of the deadline when they acquired two rentals from the A's in right fielder Josh Reddick and pitcher Rich Hill in return for three prospects who either throw hard without command, are hurt, or underperform. Reddick is arguably the third best defensive right fielder in baseball behind, I think, Jason Hayward and Adam Eaton. He has a lockdown arm, he's a solid base runner, and his slash line the last 2 years shows he has closed up his holes as a batter. He's also had a great character player for the clubhouse. Once his blister heals, I think Hill could end up being the best starting pitcher who has traded at the deadline. To acquire both for three high-risk pitchers was a solid move, especially the Dodgers signed both players to extensions at some point. And this was really to me because they did not give up Julio Urias, they did not give up Jose De Leon, and they got two great rentals, I think, the two best rentals on the market. I know people are saying Carlos Beltran is the best offensive player, best bat move, but I think they're wrong. Josh Reddick provides defense, and he provides the bat. So the best bat moved is Josh Reddick to me, and the Dodgers got him. The best pitcher move is Rich Hill, and the Dodgers got him. And the Dodgers are now trying to make this playoff push. They were trying to catch the Giants. They're trying, if not catch the Giants, have that first wild card spot. And if Clayton Kershaw is healthy by then, I'm pretty sure they'll be happy with him starting in that game. But they made the moves, and they're going at it. Josh Reddick, great on defense, as I said. Rich Hill, best pitcher moved, and the Dodgers got both. And they didn't give up Urias. They didn't give up De Leon. And they gave up three high-risk prospects that you don't know what's going to pan out with them. And if those three prospects are good down the line, then great for the Athletics. But the Dodgers have the money to re-sign that Rich Hill. They have the money to re-sign Josh Reddick. And the thing is that Athletics were not going to re-sign any of them, so they traded them away. And the Dodgers have the ability to do that if they wish. And I think it will be exciting to see how the Dodgers do down the line after adding Josh Reddick and Rich Hill. Let's move to our next A-minus team, and I'm giving the A-minus to Dave Dombrowski and Mike Hazen of the Boston Red Sox. And I think, you know, the Red Sox, they were working hard to get Chris Sale, Jose Quintana from the White Sox, but the White Sox, they decided to hang on to both of them. Still, the Red Sox were able to make several deals, and they checked every box of need. They acquired a starter in Drew Pomeranz from the Padres, a reliever in Brad Ziegler from the Diamondbacks, a right-handed utility player in Aaron Hill from the Brewers, and on the final day, a much-needed left-handed reliever who can get lefties out and Fernando Abad. Listen, it would have been great for the Red Sox to get Chris Sale. It would have been great for them to get Jose Quintana. It would have boosted the rotation even more so than it already is. But they did get Drew Pomeranz, who is an all-star, and I love the move. They did get Brad Ziegler because Kimbrel has sort of been in and out of injuries. And they did get Aaron Hill, who has versatility, along with Brock Holt on the team. And on the final day, they were smart, and they got Fernando Abad because they have trouble getting the lefties out, and Fernando Abad can do that. Great job by Dombrowski. Great job by Hazen. Our next A-minus is going to be dished out to Brian Sabian and Bobby Evans of the San Francisco Giants. And, you know, the Giants, they did what they always do at the deadlines. 1 year to starting pitcher like Jake Peavy. And another year to left-hand reliever like Javier Lopez. This year was both a starter in Matt Moore from the Rays and a reliever in Will Smith from the Brewers. They gave up third baseman Matt Duffy to get Moore. But with the acquisition of Eduardo Nunez, they could afford to do it. Moore will instantly become the third best starter behind Bumgarner and Cueto. Smith gets both right and left-hand hitters out, and he'll virtually replace Jeremy Affeldt, who retired after last season and left an obvious void that needed to be filled. And the Giants, they always seem to make the moves that it's not like the sexy move. It's not what people want to see. It's not what the fans want to see, but they trust Brian Sabian, and they trust Bobby Evans, and they do what they do, and they got, I think, underrated players, and I think these underrated players are going to do well. They got Matt Moore. They got Will Smith. They got Eduardo Nunez, and the only real, talent they had to give up is Matt Duffy, and Eduardo Nunez can fill that void, and I think that Matt Moore is going to be great. That rotation is going to be nice. Bumgarner, Cueto, Moore, Samardzija. It's going to be a rotation to – it's going to be a tough rotation to handle in the playoffs. And as I said, Giants-Cubs, that could be a great matchup. And whoever faces the Giants – and I'd love to see them face the Cubs because those pitching rotations going at it, and now they have Will Smith, both great bullpens going at it. It would be something to see, and may the best team win because – it would definitely be exciting. And I think Smith was a great acquisition because a lot of people think left-handed pitchers, they get left-handed batters out. But Will Smith is actually better when faced to right-handed pitching. Great pickup. And Jeremy Affeldt, sorely missed before this, I think Will Smith will come in and he will fill that void perfectly. And I definitely like what the Giants did, and I am definitely excited to see what acquiring more Will Smith and Eduardo Nunez does in the future down the road for the San Francisco Giants. All right, so I'm done giving out A's. I gave them out to 7 teams, but I'm going to have to give out my first B at some point. And I'm going to give that B, B plus actually, to A.J. Preller of the San Diego Padres. And the Padres, they were second to only the Yankees in terms of sellers, focusing on quality over quantity in every trade, even though that meant they had to acquire players who were further from the big leagues. The Padres sold on Drew Pomerantz, James Shields, Melvin Upton, Fernando Rodney, Andrew Cashner, and Matt Kemp. And they acquired several top five type organizational prospects, including Red Sox's best pitching prospect, Anderson Espinosa, in the Pomerantz deal, Fernando Tatis Jr. in the White Sox trade, and the Marlins' first round pick from a year ago in first baseman Josh Naylor. It will take up to 5 years to actually find out how well the Padres did. But to be honest with you, they definitely got good prospects in this. Anderson Espinosa can throw the ball hard, and he's going to provide that for the Padres in about 5 years. Fernando Tatis Jr., he will be great. And Josh Naylor is the real one I'm most excited about. And because I know he has left-handed power and first-round picks, and they definitely did a great job selling. And I'm excited to see, 2020, 2021 rolls around. I think the Padres, they will be competitive, and they will be competitive because at one point they had Pomerantz, Shields, Upton, Rodney, Cashner, and Kemp. And, Anderson Espinosa is going to be a frontline guy. Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to be great, and Josh Naylor might be the start of the team in 5 years. You never know. And I think it was a great job by the Padres and A.J. Preller. And A.J. Preller, he's like, he flips on a dime. If he thinks they're going to be competitive, he goes all in. If he doesn't think they're going to be competitive, he goes all in and rebuild. He's just an all-in type of guy, and I love that with A.J. Preller. It hasn't worked out so far, but he has done a pretty good job at going all-in with what he has been doing. All right, another B-plus to give out goes to Mike Hill of the Miami Marlins. And the Marlins, they don't have a strong farm system to work from, but were able to land their two biggest needs when they acquired both starting pitcher Andrew Cashner and reliever Fernando Rodney from the Padres in separate deals. The Marlins, they now have a legitimate chance at a wild card berth and probably wouldn't have if they didn't make these trades. And remember, if they did make it to the wild card, they will potentially have Jose Fernandez to pitch that game. The trades came at a steep cost, though, as last year's first-round pick Josh Naylor was shipped to the Padres, as we just previously talked about. And the Marlins, they don't have a strong farm system, and they realize that they have to go year in and year out and try to acquire guys because I don't think they're going to go into rebuild mode because the fans, they already don't come out when their team is competitive. They're not even selling out the place when each of those two hits away. They're having 25,000 people come out, which is pretty impressive for the Marlins, but that's not what that stadium was meant for. And you know the funny thing? I was thinking, I love the Pirates. And I was thinking, Marlins-Pirates in Miami for a wild card game. I was thinking, are they going to even sell that game out? I was like, yeah, they're going to sell that game out. But do I think that there will be more than 20, like, I was thinking 20% of the Marlins fans would be there. I think if there is a wild card game in Miami, I was thinking, whoever they play, if it's the Dodgers, if it's the Giants, if it's the Mets, if it's the Cardinals, or even if it's the Rockies, right? I think no matter, all right, if it's the Rockies, it might be a coin flip. But I think besides the Rockies, it'll be a majority of the visiting team's fans in that stadium. And Jose Fernandez, though, if he goes in that game, he will be great at home. He has been great at home in his career, and I think that he will thrive. And it'll be a tough task to defeat him. And the funny thing is, too, the Pirates, they have been in the National League wildcard game for the past 3 years. And they have ran into great starting pitching the last 2 years. One, Madison Bumgarner, and two, Jake Arrieta. It would be funny but sad to me if they ran into Jose Fernandez, one of the best pitchers in baseball, and they lost to him. Because the first wildcard game in 2013 for the Pirates was against Johnny Cueto, and he was pitching amazing at that point, but Cueto could not pitch well on the road in the playoffs. So they defeated him. But Jose Fernandez, if it's at home, watch out for whatever team plays them. And now that they have Andrew Kashner, I think that they are poised. If they do win the wildcard game with Jose Fernandez, Kashner is now a good two option in that rotation to go to. And Fernando Rodney can now help shut down the games if Fernandez and Kashner don't go deep, whoever they start after that. So good trade from the Marlins, and I'm excited to see if they do indeed make the playoffs, because if they did not get Kashner, if they did not get Rodney, I do not think that they would be poised to make a playoff run. So good job, Mike Hill. I'm excited to see what you do in the future. We have another B-plus to give out, and that goes to Mike Rizzo of the Washington Nationals. And the Nationals, they had focused on Aroldis Chapman, Andrew Miller, and Wade Davis at the top of their trade target lists. But when the asking price included most of their top pitching prospects, like Lucas Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, and Eric Fetty, they declined. They weren't going to trade a future number one starter who they controlled for 6 more years for a reliever who's either a rental or controlled for only 1 or 2 more years later. Instead, they gave up much less when they dealt left-handed reliever Felipe Rivero and minor league prospect Taylor Hearn to the Pirates for closer Mark Melancon, who had an ERA of 1.51 and converted 30 of 33 save opportunities. The Nationals get a high grade for holding on to their best arms and their strong future while improving the ninth inning dramatically. And I think this is a trade, the Melancon trade, in the case of it works out for both teams. It works out for the Pirates because they were never going to be able to sign Melancon after the season. And then they get Felipe Rivero, who they have control with until 2021. And I believe Felipe Rivero will be a closer one day for the Pirates. He throws above 100 miles per hour, great, and he's a left-hander too. Taylor Hearn, another left-hander, he pitches over 100 miles per hour. I know he made his debut yesterday. I don't know how well he did. But I like what the Pirates got, and for the Nationals, they like what they got because now they can shut down the ninth inning. And it was impressive that they did not give up Lucas Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, or Eric Fetty. That's why I congrats on Mike Rizzo for that. And I know it might just be rental Melancon, but I'm excited to see what he does in the future with the Nationals and how he does in the playoffs when he is handed the ball to shut down a game. Let's give our first B of the day out. And that goes to David Stearns of the Milwaukee Brewers. And the Brewers, I think they were third in selling behind the Yankees and the Padres. And they did extremely well in landing high-risk, high-reward prospects from the Rangers and center fielder Luis Brinson and right-handed pitcher Luis Ortiz and the Jonathan Lucroy deal. They also did well in their Will Smith trade, with the Giants landing a back-of-the-rotation starter in Joe Bickford and a possible replacement for Lucroy and Andrew Susak. And, of course, they get credit for their almost trade with the Indians, which was nixed by Lucroy. And I'm putting them third because they did a good job selling, but the Yankees and Padres, I think, did a better job selling. But Luis Brinson and Luis Ortiz, they both have the potential to be great, And I'm excited to see what they have for them in the future. So I'm excited to see what David Stearns and how this all pans out, you know, 3-5 years down the road. But I'm definitely excited to see for the Milwaukee Brewers if they are competitive 5 years from now. I'll talk about this with the Padres and now with the Brewers. Who'll be more competitive 5 years from now? It'll be cool to compare their records and what each of, you know, the players that they acquired this deadline do. We have to take a quick break on Inside MLB, but when we come back, we are going to be continuing our grading, and we won't get through all of it today, but we will finish it on Friday.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry.com is where listeners and podcasters come together. Check it out at blueberrywithnoes.com.
We are back on Inside MLB and grading some GMs on how they did at the deadline. And we were just getting down to we are still in the B range. But now we're going to move into another B. We're going to give that to Matt Silverman of the Tampa Bay Rays. And pretty much, the Rays needed a bat, and they used their starting pitching depth to get it done by trading Matt Moore to the Giants in a trade that brought back, among others, infielder and outfielder Matt Duffy. Duffy has a tremendous amount of offensive upside with good power potential and can play several different positions well. They got the best controllable bat that was available to them, and congratulations to Matt Silverman and Tampa Bay, and I'm excited to see what happens in the future by you acquiring Matt Duffy. And our next B is going to go out to Sandy Alderson of New York Mets, and he gets himself a B, right? The Mets, they entered the trade deadline ranked 13th out of 15 in the National League in runs scored. They had to do something about it, and they did when they landed Jay Bruce in a lopsided trade. Bruce is winning the NL in RBIs, and though he's a low on-base percentage player and always seems to have a few slumps, he brings a much-needed ability to hit with runners in scoring position, or at least he has this year. The Mets' outfield defense could be a problem, but with so many strikeout pitchers, it shouldn't matter as much as people think. They control Bruce through next year, and for what they gave up, made a phenomenal deal here. So congratulations on Sandy Alderson and the Mets. And I'm excited to see how Jay Bruce does in this playoff push and how he does next year for the Mets. Our next B goes out to John Mozeliak of the St. Louis Cardinals. And Mozeliak, you know, he always seems to make the position move that makes a difference. And this year might not be any different after he picked up lefty reliever Zach Duke from the Chicago White Sox. The Cardinals didn't have any more needs thanks to a great job of building depth in the offseason, which has covered the onslaught of injuries they're going through with their position players. So congratulations, John, and I'm excited to see how Zach Duke does in this playoff push, and if they do indeed make the playoffs, how he does there. Our next beat goes out to Dan Duquette and the Baltimore Orioles. And, you know, the Orioles, they have one of the game's weakest farm systems. It's obvious, which made it challenging for Duquette to swing a big trade. However, they did add a back-end rotation starter in Wade Miley, has pitched better lately. He has a 2.79 ERA over his past three starts, as well as a quality, versatile right-handed bat in Steve Pierce. So Wade Miley, Steve Pierce, they are going to the Orioles, and I am excited to see how one of the best teams in the American League in the Orioles, and how Wade Miley does down the stretch, how he does in the playoffs, and how Steve Pierce does, as he can come off the bench, he can make starts, and he can be good for Dan Duquette and the Orioles. Let's give out our next B, and that goes to Billy Bean and David Forst of the Oakland Athletics. And, you know, the A's, they tried hard to extend the contracts of impending free agents Rich Hill and Josh Reddick, but when both those negotiations failed, they traded them to the Dodgers at the deadline. The relationship between Bean and Dodgers GM Farhan Zaidi, a former employee of Bean, facilitated getting the deal done. The A's receiving three high-risk, high-reward pitchers in Frankie Montas, Grant Holmes, and Jamel Cotton. Questions about health and command have sidetracked all three, but that doesn't mean that in time the A's won't hit on them, two or maybe all three of them. So I think it was a good job on getting rid of Rich Hill and Josh Reddick because they weren't going to be able to re-sign them. And they did get some high-risk guys, but they also, if they do well, high reward. Frankie Montas, Grant Holmes, Jarrell Cotton. 5 years from now, we'll see how the A's are doing. And so good job, Billy Bean. Good job, David Forst. And well-deserved B. All right, so that's going to do it on sort of our ranking for today. We still have 14 teams to do on Friday, but thank you for listening to the grading. If you have any, you know, suggestions or you don't like any of the grades I gave out, just let me know, I guess, in the chat room right now. Or MLBinside.com, leave a comment, feedback there. So thank you for tuning in. And before we head out for the day, I'm going to give you a brief, you know, preview, audio preview, of what you can expect for our show Monday and our annual Stand Up to Cancer show. So without further ado, here is the preview for the Stand Up to Cancer show.
I stand up for my dad.
I stand up for my mom, who's the strongest person I know.
I stand up for survivors, like me.
I stand up to change the odds.
I stand up for Granny. She was a friend and a role model.
I stand up for Marshall Smith, one of my good friends.
I stand up for my grandmother, Anna Nana Brown.
I stand up for Ellie.
I stand up for Susana, Carlos, and Julio.
I stand up for those who stood up for me.
We stand up for Nancy.
I stand up for my friends. For the kids.
For my baby sister.
And all of baseball stands up for Tony Gwynn.
No matter who we are or what we do, we are all touched by cancer.
I stand up to cancer.
So that's what sort of you can expect. That's sort of the preview of the Stand Up to Cancer show. And we'll also be inviting John Lester. He will be on the show to share his story with all you and how he overcame cancer in 2006 and what he has done to help his community and everything. So we're excited to have him on the show, and I am excited for Monday and John Lester. So thank you for tuning in. My name is Benson Defector. You can head over to our website at MLBinside.com. A new article should go up every morning. And have a great Wednesday, and I will see you all on Friday. Thank you.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. It's a place where listeners and podcasters come together. Find out more at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's.com.